Welcome to Sunday Sermons and other recordings from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis, California. Please visit our website at www.uudavis.org for further information.
Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you, especially all you coming of agers in the corner. Glad to have you this morning. It's a wonderful day today. We've got the campus community leading worship together today. The folks who are, yes, we're all UC Davis students here today. And it's really a pleasure to be with all of you today. So we're going to invite folks into worship this morning with our in-gathering hymn, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis. My name is Alex Hayter-Winnett, and I am the ministerial intern and campus minister for this year.
Good morning. I'm Isabel. I'm going to be a first-year law student at Davis in the fall, and I'm part of campus ministry. We're so glad that you're here with us today.
As Unitarian Universalists, we believe that everyone is inherently worthy. Everyone has dignity. Whether you have questions on your heart, answers in your mind, no matter where you come from, the family of origin, the people you choose to call your own, no matter where you spent the night or the money in your pocket, no matter where your longings drive you, you are welcome here.
To acknowledge all that is being held by the people in this room, we light one pillar candle for the sorrows of the world, for the moments that weigh heavy on our hearts. We light a second pillar candle for the joys of the world, for the moments of hope and celebration. Let us worship together.
We light this chalice, the symbol of Unitarian Universalism, with these words, shared by Reverend Victoria Safford. Forget about enlightenment, sit down wherever you are, and listen to the wind that is singing in your veins. Feel the longing, the fear, the love in your bones. Open your heart to who you are right now, not who you'd like to be, not the saint you're striving to become, but the being right here before you, inside you. All of you is holy. You're already more or less, more and less than whatever you can know. Breathe out, look in, let go.
So now is the time we share for all the ages in our group. And we have our coming of age folks here, our younger adults, and we thought this would be a great opportunity to share a few words of advice or wisdom. So I asked the campus community to come on forward and gave them the prompt of, if you had one piece of advice you would like to have given your younger self, what would it be? So I'm going to pass it over to Ronnie, and if you could introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Ronnie, and, you know, there's a lot of advice you can give, but for a simple one would be sleep is important. Don't let anyone telling you sleeping in is bad, because you don't get to do that a lot later on in life. So soak it up. Soak up sleeping in. So.
Hi, my name's Madison. My one piece of advice to my past self would be to remember that your parents are humans too.
I think that was a crowd pleaser. I'm Carter, and a piece of advice I would give to myself would be remember that you're probably your own worst critic.
Hi, everyone. I'm Edgar, and a piece of advice I would like to give to my former self is that adults, when you're little, often tell you you can be whatever you want to be when you grow up, and that doesn't just apply to your job. It applies to everything.
Hi, I'm Amelia, and the piece of advice that I would give to my younger self is that sometimes when something bad happens to you, it feels really bad because it's the first time that thing has happened to you, and that doesn't mean that it's the worst thing in the world.
Hi, I'm Isabel, and the piece of advice that I would give would be enjoy the present. Don't plan for your future so much that you're not aware of what's going on around you.
Hi, I'm Aline, and the advice I give myself is to reflect very closely on what feelings are actually coming from you and what feelings come from other people.
What wisdom we have to share. So for our young guests, you are very welcome to continue to be with us and worship with us today. As our young folks get ready for our second service, let us sing loudly for them our children's blessing.
So I have a few thoughts on why I think campus ministry and young adult ministry are important. This week, a study was released showing that a little less than a quarter of Americans belong to no particular religious community. It comes out to be about 23% of Americans do not belong to a religious community. Statistically speaking, the so-called nuns now rival Catholics and evangelicals in the American spiritual landscape. This significant population can range from the so-called hard nuns, atheists and agnostics who have rejected religion in all of its forms, to the, quote, liminal nuns, those who have adopted an American sense of spiritual plurality. These people may be spiritual in belief and practice, but do not affiliate with a particular faith tradition, church, or denomination. The largest demographic of the nuns are young adults, those born between 1981 and 2001. Now, it stands to reason that many of the nuns, especially those who have left their childhood faith communities due to political and theological disagreements, would find their way to Unitarian Universalism. Our lack of dogma or creed, along with our progressive theology and politics, can be appealing to people who want church and religious community without the burden of orthodoxy or conservative philosophy. However, a recent study shows that Unitarian Universalist communities are also dead last in retaining our youth. Current estimations show that 90% of young people who were raised in UU communities leave the church in their young adult years and may not come back later in life. For reference, most mainline Christian communities have about a 40 to 50% retention rate, while Catholic communities have about a 70% retention rate. Meanwhile, Muslims, Jews, and Hindus have about a 75 to 80% retention rate. Interestingly enough, or at least to me, children who were raised atheist are more likely to convert to a religion later in life with a 30% retention rate. Statistically speaking, a fair number of nuns we seek to court are our very own. It is not coincidental that millennial and nun go hand in hand. While culture is putting less emphasis on religious affiliation in general, it is also very natural for young people to explore religion outside the confines of the community they grew up in. According to James Fowler's Stages of Faith, there is a common stage that occurs in late adolescence and in young adult years. This is where an individual moves from a sense of orthodoxy and fundamentalism to one of questioning, skepticism, and synthesis. As a person moves out of their comfort zone of their hometown and familiar surroundings and into the rights and responsibilities of young adulthood, they begin to question what they believe and what their identity really is. A person may leave their childhood religion or reassess it through the understanding of a self-actualized adult. By adjusting their beliefs as an adult, they may seek new religious communities. And this is why I think campus and young adult ministries are so crucial. Whether they are raised UU and are reassessing their relationship with their home faith, or if they are someone seeking new religious understandings of the world, either way, having a safe space and a comfortable place to land is crucial. Today, you will get a small insight into the work we do together in the campus community. We talk about where we come from, our familial and religious upbringings, our questions about life, the universe, and our place in it. Many of our students are in the hard sciences, and this is one of the few places where they get to explore the question of how spirituality and science inform each other. It's a place where we can question our identities, our responsibilities to ourselves, our friends, our family, and romantic partners. Campus community becomes a place where we develop and grow together in our new understandings of who we are. Some of us were raised UU, some of us were not. Some come to church on Sunday and some do not. Some consider ourselves UU and others are just grateful for this stop along the road to spiritual growth and development. But regardless, this is a place where we do spirituality together. And friends, I can think of no greater description for our larger chosen faith of Unitarian Universalism.
Our reading today comes from Carl Sagan's Pale Blue Dot speech, which he gave on the occasion of the Voyager spacecraft turning back and taking its final image of the Earth before it turned off its cameras and went off into and out of the solar system. Look again at that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. The Earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors so that, in glory and triumph, they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings, how eager they are to kill one another, how fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only known world. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit, yes. Settle, not yet. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known. I'm now going to say some words that I have written about my own field of geology. I am a graduate student in geology, and the way that I define geology is that it means that I study time. More specifically, I study the 4.567 billion years that the Earth has existed. We as humans can hope to experience maybe a few good tens of years of this time, but the Earth is thousands of thousands of thousands of years old. Through all of that time, our ancestors evolved from single-celled organisms to complex beings that can understand our own history. In this vein, think for a moment about the diverging and intersecting paths of the other descendants of our shared ancestor, and how those have been shaped by events big and small. There is a record in the rocks of those biggest events, the ones that built mountains and caused extinctions. There is also a record of smaller events, like a river changing its course or a volcano erupting. But as these events get smaller and more localized, they become harder and harder to preserve. This means that there are so many events, such as the first cyanobacteria to make oxygen, or the first animal to walk on land, which are so small that we can never directly observe them, except through the testament of our own existence. And what an existence it is. Humans have changed the timescale of geologic change. Our individual actions have consequences that last millions of years. If there are future geologists, they will know about our present existence from a layer of ash, plastic, and nuclear fallout that will literally be written in stone. Whole mountains have been moved, and new canyons have been dug for the resources within. Carbon dioxide is rising in the atmosphere, and geology tells us that other times this has happened has resulted in the disappearance of many other species. Therefore, the study of geology calls me to action to stop the worst of those negative impacts during my own few decades on this planet. Its other inhabitants are connected to us through our shared history, present, and future. And because our collective existence as a thinking and questioning species depends on what we do in the next few years, I invite you to also find spiritual truth in the 4.567 billion years it has taken us to get here. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Edgar. I'm a math student here at UC Davis, and I also have some thoughts. So one of my most treasured textbooks, actually, is a book called A Walk Through Combinatorics by Mykolos Bona. I won't bore you with an in-depth reading or retelling of his most elegant proofs or his comfortingly familiar prose, but if you would be so kind, I'd like to paraphrase a part of the preface, which contains my favorite passage. There are many ways to get to know Yosemite National Park. One could pull up a guidebook, flip through the images and the texts, enumerate the major sites on a map, and perhaps even draw in paths connecting one to the next. But I think a much better approach is to simply go out and take a walk through it, in amongst the trees. Scrambling over boulders and logs and splashing through creeks, the land is filled with such beauty and richness that even a stumbling, winding path will invariably come upon sites that will take your breath away. In this book, I take the same approach to mathematics. You see, it was this book that changed my views about math. Rather than seeing it as a collection of theorems and formulas, I started to see it as a journey, exploring questions and seeing where the answers lead you. This process of discovery, of taking walk after walk until you start to form a trail, which you call a theorem, is what I love about my subject. And it's also what I've loved most about being part of the UU community. For most of my life, my relationship with religion was more like a guidebook. It was a collection of rules and rituals and dogmas that left little room for wandering. But here I found a spiritual community that allows me to simply take a walk, to ask questions of myself and others with an understanding that the questioning is much more important than the answers. I want to thank this community for opening up that space for me. The weekly talks we have at the Belfry have been as rich and beautiful as any walk through Yosemite. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Isabel again.
and I study environmental sciences and environmental law, but I'm actually not going to talk about that today. Our theme this month is wholeness. And when I think about wholeness, it is impossible for me to describe that without thinking about incompleteness as well. I'm new to Unitarian Universalism. The first time I stepped into a UU church was last December, but before that, there was a giant gaping hole in my life where religion used to be. I was raised conservatively Catholic, and I was very involved in my youth ministry. I taught confirmation classes, ran retreats, attended Mass every Sunday. Religion grounded me. It gave me an escape from the stresses of life. When I realized I was queer, it all fell apart. Friends that I had had my whole life looked at me different. Sermons became progressively more homophobic. Suddenly, I found the place that I loved telling me that I was the work of the devil and that I was going to go to hell. As desperately as I wanted to stay, Catholicism made it impossible for me to be both Catholic and queer. For the past 4 years, I have drifted along, unanchored by the betrayal of my childhood faith. I researched other religions, but they all seem to have the same issues with LGBT people. Religions seem to be fundamentally incompatible with who I am as a person. And then I found UU, and I met Alex. He welcomed me into campus ministry, and I found a place that I can fully be myself and fully participate. And that means the world to me. I found a community, a home. UU has made me rethink everything I thought I knew about religion. It inspires me to continue striving to be more kind and just to the world around me. And I can honestly say, for the first time in a long time, that I feel whole.
Hi, I am Alini, and I study psychology at UC Davis, but I'm also not going to talk about this. I wanted to reflect about two questions. Are wholeness and completion the same? Can something be whole and not complete? My grandmother died 11 years ago when I was 14. I saw my father crying the following Christmas, but we never really talked about her or about her death. In fact, growing up, if I said words like death, disease, I would be quickly silenced by my mother because they were taboo. Words and upside-down shoes would bring in fortune. My upbringing was probably very different from yours, but we are certainly not the only ones to approach this topic hesitantly. A human favorite is to pretend most of the time that death doesn't happen. Thank you. Death didn't happen, death won't happen. And yet, most of us know what it's like when someone close dies. A feeling commonly described is a huge empty space within us. I felt this too. This space tends to get smaller, but we carry it with us and never really goes away. Death is so intimate to us that we may think it's just a part of life, but it's much more than that. Death is life's final form. Death is when life is complete. And the funny thing about it is that because life needs death to be complete, we are never complete. Death takes a piece of us, and we are to keep on carrying this hole, this empty space. Death is a powerful example of incompletion due to completion, but it's not the only one. I cannot enter your minds or read you, despite people's reactions when I tell them I study psychology. I cannot tell how it's like to be you. But if I had to guess, I would say that most of us, if not all, are well acquainted with emptiness. In particular, emptiness due to completion. The death of someone close, the awareness of our own mortality, a goal or endpoint you finally reached, nostalgia of the times of your childhood or youth, a never-ending hunger and search for happiness or spirituality or perfection, and unquiet restlessness. And to find other examples of empty spaces, we just need to look within us. But it's okay. I think we should hear more often that it's okay to feel this way. We may feel tempted to fill up this empty space, to stuff it with lots of things, distractions and entertainment, to spend our precious time on activities we don't really care about, or routines that are automatic but help us fill our emptiness temporarily, or even important, meaningful activities and situations that make this empty space go away. But then, when you least expect, it's back. And then off we go again. We fall into an insatiable search for completion. What I want to suggest, though, is that trying to fill up the empty space is not our only option. We can also stop being attached to it and just accept it. We can embrace our incompletion, this very human sensation. There's no missing piece, not of the exact same shape and fit of our own unique holes. Instead of finding compassion, we can find wholeness. And now I can go back to my introducing questions. Can completion make you incomplete? Yes, definitely. But we can embrace this sensation the same way we breathe or laugh, as a part of being human. And then, only after it, we can start to find out if we can be whole without being complete. And for this, we have many other many other words from each other. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Carter. I'm a statistics graduate student. And I was thinking about what makes me feel whole. And the first and maybe the only thing that comes to mind is relationships. And so I'm going to read a poem by Robert Frost about that is, I find thought-provoking about relationships and the ways maybe we limit ourselves within them. So this is called Mending Wall. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen ground swell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I have come after them and made repair where they have left not one stone on a stone, but they would have the rabbit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps, I mean. No one has seen them made or heard them made, but at spring mending time we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go, to each the boulders that have fallen to each. And some are loaves, and some so nearly balls, and, we have to use a spell to make them balance. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side. It comes to little more. There where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I'd asked to know what I was walling in or walling out, and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly, and I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there, bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand, like an old stone, savage armed. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me, not of woods only in the shade of trees. He will not go behind his father, saying, and he likes having thought of it so well. He says again, good fences make good neighbors. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Madison. I'm an environmental engineering PhD student. But today I want to talk about my grandma. So when my grandmother passed, she left behind hundreds of quilts. Her sewing room was full of half-finished quilts, begun and then forgotten, as Alzheimer's took her memory piece by piece. but finished quilts covered beds and walls and were stuffed away in closets. Quilts sewn for weddings and new babies were already scattered across Kansas, perhaps even further, in the homes of her children and grandchildren. A quilter sees the beauty in remnants and scraps. She visualizes how they will fit into the mosaic of squares and triangles. From a heap of disparate pieces, orderly checkerboards, dizzying windmills, and many pointed stars take form. Poured into every quilt is the love and dedication of someone who would endure the pricks of pins and the burns of the hot iron just to make sure that every corner lines up, just so. Because while you could buy a mass-produced duvet at IKEA, you deserve to sleep under a work of art. When we would sew together, my grandma would tell me that my tiny hand stitches marching obediently across the fabric were the product of my Swedish heritage. This always gave me a sense of belonging to a grand ancestral succession of quilters. When I see quilts, I think of those distant female relatives far, far away from their homes and families on the Kansas prairie, living in a house dug out of the sod. When I see quilts, I see my grandmother, just as fiercely strong as all those women who came before her. I see her as she truly was, creative, stubborn, loving, and prone to snorting while laughing, which of course would leave everyone in stitches. Last weekend, I went home to Kansas City for a memorial service for my grandma and to spend time with my family. Looking at old photographs of my grandma, I was struck by how little I knew about her. I always remembered her from my childhood as wearing turtlenecks and vests embroidered and embellished with buttons, ever the epitome of grandma's style. But in one old photograph, I see her as a young woman, wearing a gingham and shorts blouse combo that I like find myself quite envious of, posing at a scenic overlook. I see a young woman, perhaps not unlike myself. Before she was grandma, who was she? There's so many questions I would ask her if I could. What did she dream her life would be? Why did she put cornflakes on top of her cheesy potatoes? Instead, I have my memories of her and the acknowledgement of the mystery of the beautifully complex quilt of her life.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ronnie, and I'm a biochemistry undergraduate here at Davis. But I'm going to take a little bit deviation from that science and talk more about astronomy, kind of in tie to the pale blue dot reading that was read earlier. So if you can imagine a 10-year-old me sitting in my dad's minivan, on one side I'm squished between a pile of sleeping bags and camping gear, and on the other side is a really big telescope. And we're on our way to some dark corner of the desert so we can get the best possible viewing of the stars. So my dad has always been interested in astronomy, and growing up I would join him on these adventures to star parties, which are not actual parties, which is very disappointing as a child. but what it actually is a place where, like, fellow astronomers would come together and share their love of stars and space and looking out into the universe. And it's quite stunning when you get to these, like, dark corners of America. You're away from city lights and their influence. And you look through these scopes and see these brilliant galaxies, these star clusters and these specks of light. And then you were viewing them through these pieces of equipment that are so lovingly cared for by their owners, so you can get the best possible, the clearest image, the brightest image. And even greater is, I think, the perspective that it can give you. I'm sad to say I never truly appreciated the beauty as a kid. It's like, wow, another star. but it wasn't kind of until the last couple years that I've grown to really appreciate, like, the opportunities I've had to see these distant galaxies and these star clusters. And what kind of perspective can it give you? So you can be casually looking through a scope, and you can think about the stats. So what do I mean by the stats? Well, one of my, like, favorite clusters, a globular cluster called M13, it's 22,000 light years away. So if you think about that for a second, 22,000 light years. That's, my tiny human brain can't even comprehend that distance. You know, I can't compute that amount of space.
And astronomy really puts into perspective that on Earth we're just a pale blue dot, you know, dwarfed by the vastness that is space. So then I kind of go down this rabbit hole, you know, I'm like, what is our place in the universe? How did we get here? Who are we to the solar system? What is our solar system to the galaxy? What is our galaxy to a cluster of galaxies? You know, our universe is expanding, and millennia from now, we will be too far away to even see the stars. And these stars and galaxies, if there are future civilizations, could be a myth to them, which is crazy. Because think about how much of our understanding of the world stems from what is outside our Earth. Many people have said that science and spirituality don't really go together. You know, they're opposite ends of a spectrum that's kind of innately at odds with each other. And for me, that hasn't been the case. I think appreciating the world, not just on the large scale, but the cosmic scale, and having a sense of, you know, our tiny infinitesimal part of the universe, contemplating how it all came to be, I can't think of a better way to find the spirituality within science. So, like, say there's a dark night, you know, the Milky Way is bright across the sky, and you're staring up at the seemingly infinite universe. Learning the science behind it all has made me become closer to my own spirituality. And I hope everyone here will have, or has had, the chance to gaze at a sky of unpolluted light, where maybe you can see how your spirit can relate to the stars. Thank you.
Friends, let us gather together for a moment of stillness and prayer and reflection. Spirit of love, life, and justice, you who go by many names, we acknowledge your presence here now. We give thanks for this opportunity to worship together, to do the work of the people. We give thanks for our chosen faith, the one that encourages us and drives us and challenges us. We give thanks for our elders and our young, those who show us the way things have been and the way things can be. We give thanks for this beautiful spring day, for the plants and the animals, for the warming of the soil, for the returning light. We bring into our hearts and minds those who struggle. Those who struggle with health. Those who struggle with wholeness. Those who struggle for justice. May their struggle be not in vain. May we love and support them. We wait with those who wait. Those who wait for a new day coming. For new love in this world. For news both good and bad. For the stirring within that shows the way. And we especially wait with our minister, Reverend Morgan McLean, as she starts her parental leave today. Let us open our hearts and our minds as we share the prayers of the people. Those people, events, and places that weave us together in a tapestry of love we call community. For all these prayers, those spoken and those that remain in the silent sanctuaries of our hearts, we give thanks.
We extinguish these candles. May we know that the joys and concerns we share together bring us closer in the human experience. And we extinguish this chalice, symbol of this church, but not the light of truth, the beauty of justice, or the warmth of community. May it serve as a beacon in our hearts until we return.
All right. Friends, if we could gather together, please reach out, grab a hand, touch a shoulder, make human contact, eye contact, any sort of connection. That's what we're about here, is human connection. Friends, we live together on this pale blue dot. The rocks and trees, canyons and rivers are our home. The wholeness we seek is found in the hands we hold. The traditions that give us meaning are ours to find. The memories that sustain us, the dreams for the future, the activities that allow us to embrace our incompleteness. Friends, the mystery of life is in us. Where are we going? Where did we come from? All we know is we will get there together. Friends, our worship has ended, but our service has just begun. Let the people say amen.
Amen. Amen.